I was telling someone earlier in the week that I'm a runner and I've injured one of my knees, and when I sit for a little while, it stiffens up on me. But all the food that I've eaten this week, I think it's gone to my knee, and I'm feeling much better. Well, this is the end. I appreciate so very much the opportunity to be with you this week, and I want to thank publicly the elders for the kind invitation to come and be with you. I appreciate them so very much. They're great men, and I know that you esteem them highly in the work's sake, and they deserve that respect that you give them. And so thank you, gentlemen, for the invitation. Thank you, congregation, for allowing me to come and be with you this week. And I trust that I've done some good for the Lord. My intent is to do as little harm as possible and to be an edifier and an encourager and teach people what to do to love and to serve the Lord. So thank you so much for allowing Sue and I to be in your presence. Those of you who provided meals for us, either in your home or were kind enough to take us out, I appreciate that. Your hospitality is exactly what a Christian's hospitality should be, and Sue and I will not soon forget that. So thank you very much for your kindness, your generosity, and the love that you have extended to us. And I tell you, our facilities this week have been great. We were stuck in the basement, but loved it. It's an outstanding facility, and I want to thank the McCulloughs for putting up with us, and thank you very much. I love both of you guys, and you're great people, and you're dear to us, and you're in our hearts. And thank you for having us. And I didn't say bye to Mitzi, so if you'll do that, why, I would appreciate it. One of the greatest things about being here this week was getting to know better Brother Don Wright, getting to know Janice. They are some of the sweetest people that I believe I have ever had the privilege to meet. And I want to tell you, you got a real deal here. He's a godly man. She is a godly woman. They compliment each other. They love the Lord. They love each other. We've got a fine family, and I just appreciate them so very much. Don's going to be with us next spring, as a matter of fact, in a meeting at Danville. I'm looking forward to that. I told him if he doesn't bring Janice, I'm not sure we're going to allow him to come. But we do look forward to having him. And thank you, brother. Glad to know you and glad to work with you. And I love you and appreciate you. Going to be great things here, you guys working together here at Brown Street. But thank you so very much. If you're ever down our way, why, come in and see us. I said that one time to a group of people. I was closing out a meeting. I said, as we do in the South, y'all come when you can. And it was about 2 or 3 weeks later, they rented a 15-passenger van and filled that rascal up, and they came down. And spent a weekend with us. And Sue said, if you ever do that again, please tell them to spread it out. So we'd love to see you and love to have you, but come one or two at a time. That would help us out a whole lot. So appreciate that so very much, being with you, and would love to have you come and be with us at any time that you can. I put Joe in a fix tonight, and I appreciate Joe and the singing that he's done. All the song leaders have just done a fantastic job. Appreciate that. I wish I had a singing voice. God gave me a talking voice, and sometimes it's not all that good either. But if I could sing like Joe and some of these other guys, I'd get on the radio. You guys did a great job. But I messed Joe up tonight. I told him what I was going to preach, and then, like a preacher often does, he changes his mind at the last minute, and Joe didn't have time to change his song, but I love that song that was sung. But put him in a fix. I want to go to the Old Testament this evening, and I want to examine something that is revealed in the... I'm not working here for some reason. Here we go. I want to go back to the book of Ecclesiastes, and there's many wonderful lessons in the book of Ecclesiastes. As a matter of fact, if you haven't spent time studying that wonderful book, then I would suggest that you do so, because really what Solomon is doing, and I do believe that Solomon is the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes, he's giving us information about life under the sun. And what he means by that, of course, is life upon this earth. Life as we know it. He said in verse 3 of chapter 1, what profit has a man from all his labors in which he toils under the sun? And then what he does, and I believe it's a journal of his search for the meaning of life under the sun, what Solomon does is begin to give a lot of advice that we really need to make application in our lives. As a matter of fact, he goes into chapter 2 and he points out, you know, you may work all of your life, but your work and your labor under the sun is in vain, because what you earn, what you have, what you hoard is going to be left to somebody else. They're going to get it, and then what good is it? It's like grasping for the wind. It's like trying to bottle sunshine. But you know, people don't listen to that advice. They don't listen when he points out that education is folly. Wisdom, as far as under the sun, it is folly. It's just vanity and vexation of spirit, striving for the wind. And just throughout the book, you get tidbits of information. You get some wisdom for life that is under the sun. Then he gets over into chapter 7 and he says something that, well, we alluded to it earlier in the week, but really it's something that I believe most of us would want to stand up and take issue with. When he said in verse 2 of chapter 7, better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. Well, you know, we tend on the surface to just want to take issue with that. How many would rather go to a party? Or how many would rather go to a ball game or go to the golf course or some place of merriment rather than going to somewhere where there's mourning and grief occurring? But he says in reality, we need to go to the house of mourning because that's the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart and just realize that life upon this earth is indeed brief. It's fleeting. It's going to get away from us fairly quick. Then he points out in verse 5 that it's of chapter 7 that it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Well, this is another good piece of advice. He said it would be better for somebody to come up and rebuke you if you are in error, if you are making a mistake, rather than somebody to flatter you, somebody to just be a yes man to you. Well, that's just flattery of fool. Yes, that's not profitable. And then he says something in verse 10 that I believe many of us tend to have a problem accepting, and I'll put that on the board. He says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Now, just think about what he's saying. He's saying, you know, just isn't it kind of silly? Isn't it just kind of silly to live in the present and just dream about the past? Isn't it kind of foolish just to live in nostalgia? I tell people I like nostalgia. I like thinking about things in the past. I like the music that perhaps I grew up on that I'm familiar and comfortable with, but I don't want to live there. I don't want to live in nostalgia. And this is what Solomon is saying. He said, you know, it's not wise to just sit around and think about and long for and pine for that which we refer to as the good old days. Now just think about how many times do we do that? How many times do we sit back and think, those of us as we grow older, we look back and we say, I tell you what, now back when I was a boy, back when I was a girl in school, back when I was growing up here and there, and we just kind of grow melancholy and think about these good old days. Life seemed to be better. Life seemed to be simpler. It seemed to be safer. It was a time before we were muddled by the confusion that we have today. We tend to sometimes want to go back to the good old days that Norman Rockwell would write about and would paint about. And we would think about those good old days of nostalgia, the old lamplighter, and such things as this. Or we would think about the good old days, you know, we could just shut down, leave the doors open, and just go down to the fishing hole and just kind of relive the day, you know, just the good old days. Or it's like I tell my grandchildren sometimes, you know, they ask me, say, Granddad, let's go up to McDonald's. You like to go to McDonald's? I says, yeah, I like to go to McDonald's. I says, as a matter of fact, I can remember when McDonald hamburgers were 15 cents a piece. And he said, boy, that's the good old days, wasn't it, Granddad? I said, well, you might think so. You go there and get a meal for 35 cents, but was it really the good old days? Well, that's what we think, you know. Back then, we kind of tend to think this was a time of panacea. You know, the good guys wore white and the bad guys would wear black hats. And I mean, it was distinguished and we knew. And this is what happens today. We're longing for the good old days. We look back in nostalgia and we want the good old days. But let me ask you, when we think about that, exactly what are the good old days? Where are the good old days and what are the good, and how far back do we go? Now, some of you who were probably a lot younger than I, maybe you look back and you think, well, the 1980s when I was in school. You know, that those are the good old days, you know. Remember the hair? Hey, come on now, really? I mean, we're talking about the good old days here? Or maybe we go back, let's go back a little further than that. Let's go back to the 1960s. You know, that's when I was in high school, you know. And so we go back then. We go back to the hippies and the tie-dyed and the plaids and the bell-bottoms and all of these other things, the hippies and all of that that was going on. Are these the good old days that we long to look for? Or maybe we go back to the 50s to Leave It to Beaver and Ozzie and Harriet. Are those the good old days that we're looking for? Do we go back to the 1940s? Go back to what is referred to as the greatest generation, when a lot of those boys, and that's what they were on Normandy on D-Day 1944. You know, is that the good old days? When thousands of these American boys lost their lives invading Normandy, France? So we long for the good old days. What are we talking about here? How far back do we go? Do we go into the 30s during the Great Depression? Do we go back to a time before we had refrigeration and we had to depend upon the iceman to come and deliver ice in order to cool the milk? You know, how far back do we go? What do we consider to be the good old days? The 1920s? You know, when about the only thing that we could get would be at the general store, and then you would have to order by catalog and hope that it would get there in a month or two. Go back to the 1900s when we had to walk from place to place. Or if we had the money to buy a team of mules or a team of horses, this was the way that we got from one place to another. What do we talk about when we long for the good old days, and why do we do it? Why in the world are we doing that? Longing and pining for the good old days. Now, have we stopped to really consider, those of us who want to live in nostalgia and live in the past, have we stopped to consider? Now, let me ask you, I'm going to be kind of frank with you here. Would you really like to go back to the days when maybe you had a two-hole outhouse? Maybe you go back to 8-track tapes or typewriters or vinyl records or the old dial-up phone? Are these the things that we really want to go back to? Do we want to go back to a time before this was available? I mean, let's be realistic, you know. Do we want to go back to where the time before we had central heat and we had to be warmed by a stove with wood and kindling or coal? Do we want to go back to a time before there was central air conditioning? Do we want to go back to a time before there were dryers and ladies hung their wash out on the line? There may be still a few people doing this, but for the most part, this is something that's in the past. And do we want to go back to a time of the Jim Crow era? Do we really want to go back to segregation and things of this nature? What are we talking about when we talk about wanting to go back and enjoy the good old days? Solomon says the old days may just be that. They may just be old days. Solomon says, don't pine for these. But yet many people do. And so my question is, why do we crave the good old days? Because in doing that, we're losing the present. When we spend time in nostalgia, looking back and longing for these good old days, we're robbing ourselves of what God has given us in the present. Now, I believe there are reasons why we pine for and long for the good old days. And one reason, I believe, is our memory is flawed. I don't think we can remember correctly. We're not looking back with wisdom. We're looking back with amnesia. We think, you know, well, the good old days. Yeah, I want to go back to the good old days when I was in school. Do you remember what was going on when you were in school? Do you remember how you worried about your dates? You remember how you worried about your complexion? Do you remember when you worried about all of these other things? Is this what you want to go back to? You see, our memory's flawed. We're not remembering correctly how things really were. The competition, the disappointments. We forget exactly how we look. I remember a brother in class, you know, we're having a Bible class one time, and he was talking about the things that he used to do. Well, when I used to do this, and well, when I was, and I used to do that. And then he talked, well, when I was, and I used to do something else. And finally, an old brother sitting in class, he had it about up to here, and he told him, he said, yeah, you know what? The older we get, the better we were. And that's the way it is. Our memory is flawed. Do we really want to go back? I wonder if Kate Goslin would like to go back. And many of you may not know her, but as she looked then, but I wonder if she would really like to go back. You see, we don't remember how things really were. You know, I grew up in the 1960s. And people look back on that, well, that was the year, you know, those are the Andy Griffith episodes, and those were this, and those were that, and the good old times, and the good old days. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I don't have a memory of the 60s in that way, because that was a time when the war continued. And I'm talking about the war in Southeast Asia. And when I think back in the 1960s, I remember what it was like not to get a student deferment and be called up for the draft and realize that you're going to spend your senior trip in Saigon. This is not pleasant memories for those of us who lived through that time. It's not a pleasant memory for me to remember my friend Fred Chodnicki and how he was shot in the face by a sniper in the jungles of Vietnam and became disfigured for the rest of his life. Or my friend Bob Muss, whose name is on the Vietnam War Memorial, panel 14E, six down from the top. A kid that I ran around with, lost his life in Vietnam. I can remember being in uniform and hearing people say baby killer and things of this nature. This is not pleasant memories. But you see, what we do is we forget how things really were. Time mellows our memories. You just think for a moment about the Hebrews. The Hebrews, ladies and gentlemen, were in Egyptian captivity for 400 years. God sent Moses to deliver them from captivity. And you remember what happened? He was delivering them from bondage. He was delivering them out of slavery. And here's what was said in Exodus chapter 14 and verse 12. Is this not the word that we told you? Here's what they're saying to Moses. Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. You had it good back there? Are you kidding me? You had it good serving those taskmasters? Come on, what are you talking about? Over in chapter 16 and verse 3, and the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You see, what we tend to do is we look at the issues and the situations and the tragedies and the lives that we're living now, and we think, you know, it's never been this bad. And so we long for a time when we feel that everything was perfect, and it wasn't. You know, this is one of the things that's happening to Christians today. We're losing sight of what God intends for us to do now, for longing for the way that it used to be. But our memories are flawed. It wasn't as good as we remember it being. And I'll tell you another reason why people long and crave for the good old days. Not only is our memory flawed, we're completely dissatisfied, disenchanted, and disgusted with the present. We just don't like our lot in life. Things didn't turn out the way that we hoped that they would. Things didn't turn out the way that we had planned and the way that we had dreamed, and our aspirations have not been realized. And so we long for a time when we were young and we could dream and reach for the stars. And we're just dissatisfied with the way that things are. You know, I think about the glory and the grandeur of King Solomon's dominion and how far his dominion reached. And I think about what the Queen of Sheba said as she came and looked at all that he had. And she said, "The half has not been told." But you know, something happened to the kingdom of Solomon. The kingdom of Solomon was divided, and then it was destroyed. It was taken into Babylonian captivity. And then when they were allowed to go back from Babylonian captivity and rebuild, all they could remember was the grandeur of Solomon's temple. And so when they came back and they began to lay the foundation for the new temple, when they saw how small that foundation was, in Ezra chapter 3 and verse 12, many of the priests and Levites and head of the father's houses, old men who had seen the first temple, wept with a loud voice when the foundation of this temple was laid. Oh, they remembered how it used to be, and this is not nearly what I remember. I can remember how the old temple was, and this temple is not nearly what that temple was. Zechariah 4 and verse 10 says, "Now is this time is the day of small things, small in comparison with the temple of Solomon." Haggai chapter 2 and verse 3, to compare with Solomon's temple, the Bible says, "It was nothing in our eyes." Well, this temple is nothing compared to Solomon's temple. Forget the 70 years of Babylonian captivity. Forget the slavery. Forget the slaughter. Forget all of those things. I just don't like this temple. I just don't like the way this is. I think this is just too inferior. And aren't we that way today? Don't we live our lives that way today? You know, we look at how things are going in today, the present, the now. It has real pain. It has real loss. It has real tears. It has real hurt. It has real disappointment. And you know, we think back. We think back of the grandeur and the splendor of the former days. And you know, we didn't have that pain. And we didn't have that loss. And we didn't have those tears. All we're remembering are the good times. We're remembering the pleasant times. We're remembering really what we want to remember. And we're really developing a scenario that really did not exist. We've forgotten the pain and the problems of that we had then because we're focused upon our disappointments now. Our pain today is no greater than the pain of the past generations. Not at all. Oh, it's got to be worse now than it yet. Why do we think that? You know, we think there wasn't crime. We think there wasn't murder. We think there wasn't child abuse. We think those things that are occurring today were not occurring then. You know, I just have to tell you. You know, yeah, today we're facing AIDS. Yeah, that's a problem. There's no question about that. That's something that wasn't going on then. And you go back several generations, they weren't facing the bomb. You know, we've got the nuclear threat with Iran, North Korea, and some of these other places. And that wasn't a threat at that time. And so, you know, we look at the problems that we have today and the issues that we face and the situations that are developing in our lives, you know, the cancers that people are having today. Hey, but listen. The past generations, they had their problems. They fought polio. They had TB and typhoid and flu. They had things that were taking their lives and things that they were concerned with. Oh, I long for the good old days. Before the bomb and before AIDS and before all of this. Hey, the year after my grandfather was born, he was born in 1903. The year after he was born, 1904, do you have any idea what the life expectancy in America was in 1904? 47 years of age was the life expectancy. Are we wanting to go back to the good old days? Now somebody said, "Now, J.R., really, you're missing sometimes what I'm trying to say." Well, what do you say? Well, when I start talking about longing for the good old days, I'm not talking about in times when the life expectancy was 47. I'm not talking about, you know, those things that you've been taught. I'm talking about maybe going back to a time, and let's go back to a time when the church was growing by leaps and bounds. That would be a time in nostalgia that I would like to relive. Now let's go back in time. Let's think about that. Let's go back to the time when, in Acts chapter 2, when 3,000, about 3,000 became Christians on the day of Pentecost. That was a great time. Wouldn't that be wonderful to have a gospel meeting like that where we could see 3,000 people become Christians? I mean, this would be something that would build us up and stir us and edify us and encourage us. It would be a wonderful time to live in that event and just relive that and experience it. But you've got to also understand something. When those things were occurring like that, there were other issues occurring too. Do you realize that with that kind of phenomenal growth, do you remember what the church was going through? Do you remember the persecution that arose? Do you remember that Stephen was stoned to death and persecution was occurring on a regular basis? You remember in Acts chapter 12 when James was beheaded with the sword? These things were occurring. Yes, there was phenomenal growth, but there were also other issues. Now, I, for one, would love to see 3,000 obey the gospel. But how would you also like the announcement when Don got up and gave the announcements tonight? How would you like for the announcements to include, well, listen, we've got our elders are not here tonight because they've been arrested and one of them has been killed. Those were the kind of announcements that were occurring at that time. Well, you know, we've lost our place of worship. The authorities have come in and shut it down. Those are the kind of announcements that we would face if we were under that kind of persecution. Do not misunderstand me. I long for a time. I long to experience that when people were being saved by the multitudes. No question about it. But with that, we also have to recognize there are other things that we're not taking into account. Well, somebody said, well, J.R., I'm not really talking about going back to New Testament times. Maybe we could just go back to a point in life and a point in time, let's say during the Restoration Movement, during the days of Barton W. Stone, and during the days of Alexander Campbell and Walter Scott and Raccoon John Smith and some of these guys that would go out and you know, Walter Scott, for example, with his five-point sermon was able to just convert thousands and thousands of people. And we read about that in restoration history, and it stirs our souls. And we look at situations today, and you'll say, you know what? We're just not converting people like that. And I just wish we could go back in time and convert those people. But let me tell you something. You've got to think about something. Yes, there were thousands of people being baptized. There were thousands of people being converted. But you've got to understand, they were having gospel meetings that lasted a month or maybe 2 months. And people would ride for hours on flatbed wagons to go and hear preaching that would last for 3 and 4 hours. And you know, today, you know, the problem is we're not willing to make the commitment that they were willing to make. The problem is today we want gospel preaching in sound bites, and we want convenience, and we want comfort. Now, if we're going to experience the growth that they experienced, we're going to have to experience the commitment that they had. Rather than just living in the past and rather than just living in nostalgia, we're going to have to develop the attitude perhaps that they had. Yes, we may be dissatisfied with the way that things are. But living in the past and longing for the past is not going to correct that. Why do people crave the good old days? It could be that our memory is flawed. It could be that we're just dissatisfied with the present. But I think the biggest reason for that, ladies and gentlemen, is because we don't appreciate the here and now. We don't appreciate what we have. And we don't appreciate what God has given to us until it is taken from us. And then we begin to appreciate it. You take, for example, our youth. How many of us, when we, and I can say this to those young people who are here tonight, How many of us adults actually appreciated when we were 14 years old? How many of us appreciated when we were 16 or 17 years old? Weren't we wanting to be older? Weren't we wanting to experience something else rather than just living the life that we have? Now we nostalgically look back and want that because it's taken from us. It's gone. It's never to be regained. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes about that in chapter 11 and verse 10. He said, childhood and youth are vanity. What does he mean by that? Does he mean it's worthless, it's useless? No, that's not. The word vanity, it means transitory, it's fleeting, it's passing. What he's saying is childhood and youth is swiftly getting away from us. We're not going to be 16 forever. We're not going to be 18 forever. We'll not be 21 forever. Life will pass us by. And we don't appreciate what we had as a young person until it's gone. And I'm going to tell you something. Young people that begin to experiment with tobacco, maybe smoking or smokeless tobacco, I'm telling you, these young people are making some silly decisions, some foolish decisions, some sinful decisions, because they don't appreciate the youth that they have. They don't appreciate what God has given to them. And I'm not just picking on the young people. I'm saying that most of us were this way. This is what a fellow means when he says, well, I tell you what, if I knew I was going to live this long, I took better care of myself. You know, we just don't appreciate what we have until it's taken from us. We make decisions in our youth that destroy our health. We make decisions in our youth when it pertains to a marriage covenant. We get involved in a situation that didn't last because we went into this thing, you know, unprepared. And now we're going to have to spend the rest of our lives suffering the consequences of that. Or we develop some hurtful relationships, develop some hurtful habits. And then when our youth is gone, we long for it. Oh, I just wished I could go back. I wished I could just go back and change that. Well, you can't. We crave the good old days because we don't appreciate it till it's gone. And this is true of our parents. I'm afraid we don't appreciate our parents until they're taken from us. Paul writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 4, and he reminds Timothy that children are to repay or requite their parents. And he says that this is good and acceptable before God. But you know what? When we're young, our parents are a source of embarrassment to us. When we're young, mom and dad are just a source of shame to us. We don't want anybody to know they're our parents. We're just ashamed of them. And then when we reach middle age, we're so busy with our own lives, we neglect them. We don't call them. We don't look in on them. We don't care about them. We're too busy with our own lives, and mom and dad are off over here growing old, just longing for a few minutes of your time. But you don't have time for that. I've got this to do, and I've got that to do, and I've got soccer to go to, and I've got football to go to, and I've got baseball to go to. Mom, I'll try to catch you later on that. But one day, mom's going to be gone. One day, dad's going to be gone. And then you're going to spend the rest of your life longing for the time, but if I could just go back, if I could just hear mom talk once again, if I could just pick up the phone and hear dad say hello. You don't appreciate it till it's gone. But you know what you can do? If your mom or your dad, your parents are still alive, if you've not been in communication with them, if you've not been spending some time with them, if you've not been looking in upon them, shame on you, begin to do it. This is what is good and acceptable to God. We can't wait till it's too late. I don't know how many times I've held funerals and I've stood by the head of a casket as people were viewing. And then finally the family would come up and some young woman would throw herself across the chest of this body that's lying there in the casket and she said, Daddy, I love you. Daddy, please hear me, I love you. And I'm thinking all the time, girl, he can't hear a word you're saying. Did you say it while he was alive? We allow things to take precedence in our lives and we ignore wonderful, precious people that we ought to be spending some time with. Oh, if I could just have Mom back for the holidays. If I could just one time see her laugh again in the kitchen, wearing that silly apron that she used to wear. But it's too late. She's gone. And I think that's true as far as brethren in Christ are concerned. We don't appreciate them until they're gone, until they're taken from us. The Bible says in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 22 that we're to love one another fervently with a pure heart. Yet do we do that? Is this something that do we do it as we should? You know, so many brethren want to bicker and pick one another apart and hold grudges and won't speak to one another. This is not the way that it should be among the people of God. You know, we're to love each other. And over the years, ladies and gentlemen, I'm confident that our lives have been touched with many good and godly people who have had a tremendous impact and influence upon us. And now they're gone. And you know, while they were with us, we didn't love them as we should. We didn't include them as much as we should or as much as we could. You just think about the Bible teachers that you had. And the things that you were taught in those Bible classes and good godly elders in your past that just helped you and mentored you so much. Or gospel preachers who came among you and just spent some time with you. And did you love them and appreciate them as you should? They're gone. And you know, we can't recall that. But I tell you what we can do. We can look at our present elders and we can appreciate them and we can love them and we can give them a word of encouragement. We can, you got a wonderful preacher and his family here. Let them know how much you love them and how much they mean to you. And look out at your brothers and sisters that you worship with. They're not going to always be here. Let them know now how much you love and how much you appreciate them. Because when they're gone, you can't recall these days, and then we're going to be prone to want to live in the past. Oh, if I could just go back, if I could just experience their kindness again, or their wisdom, or their knowledge, or the examples that they set. But you can't. So do with what you have now, so you won't live in the past. And this is so true when it comes to our soul. We're not going to really, many of us, appreciate our soul until it's taken from us. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, Jesus said, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul?" One day, every one of us in this building is going to experience our soul leaving our body as our body dies. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do to forestay that. We can't do it. There's no escape. There's no discharge from that war. Ecclesiastes also tells us. Just like the rich fool in Luke chapter 12, who was counting all of his holdings and looking at all that he had and told him, "Soul, take it easy. You've got many goods laid up for many years. But God," and by the way, anytime you read in the Scriptures, "but God," you just see that as a big eraser, God just erasing all of that. But God is now going to intervene. "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you. You're going to die. There's going to be a separation.'" Now, when was he thinking about his soul? There's no indication that he was. And many of us live our lives neglecting our soul, live our lives as though we're never going to die. But one day it's going to occur. And, you know, if we live in sin and we live in rebellion, selling our soul for a few moments of pleasure, a few moments of gratification, one day it's going to happen. One day our soul is going to be separated from our body. One day it's going to be said of us, "Your soul is required of you." Then you know what's going to happen? It's going to be just like the other night we studied about the rich man and Lazarus. We're going to be just like that rich man. We're going to be in torment. We're going to be crying out, "Have mercy on me, now I'm concerned." Now I want something done. Now I want salvation, but it's too late. It's too late to receive salvation. I want you to stop and consider something. You know, we studied about the rich man and Lazarus, and we didn't bring this up the other night, and I think it's important to think about. When the rich man was crying out in Hades, in this place of torment, for just a dip of water to cool his parched tongue, just a little cold water, what was it Abraham told him? You remember what Abraham told him? He used a word. He said, "Son, remember. Remember." And you know what he's telling him to do? Just exactly what Solomon said not to do. Looking back to the good old days. Son, remember in your life. Hey, you know what? I tell you, I think that's as torturous as anything that I can imagine. Spending an eternity longing for, wishing for, and never being able to achieve the good old days again. Remember, in your lifetime, he said, you had things come going your way and Lazarus didn't have anything. Now, son, remember. How painful would that be? Spending a lifetime remembering the good old days. The time that you could have left sin, but you didn't. Spend a lifetime or an eternity remembering the time that you could have been baptized, but you didn't. The time that you could have lived faithful, but you didn't. The time that you could have obeyed the Lord, but you didn't. The time you could have repented, but you didn't. The time that you could have prepared for heaven, but you didn't. Looking back in eternity and remembering tonight, right now, this time, this day, this period, this moment, this second. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the good old days are the days that we have right here, right now, and the opportunities that God has given to each of us. This is the good old day. Now, I don't know what your spiritual condition is, but I would be willing to venture a serious guess that there are probably some in this assembly tonight who've never trusted the Lord and become a Christian. If you reject this opportunity, you reject this time, it may be that you're going to spend an eternity remembering this very moment when you're told to, son, remember. Remember the opportunities that you had. Remember the opportunity you had to become a Christian. Remember how you were thinking about it. Remember the invitation song that was sung. The good old days are right here, right now. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 2. Don't long for the good old days. You cannot recall them. And don't anticipate good old days in the future because they may not occur. All you have is right now. All the time that you're promised is right now. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, repent of your sins. You know, we've done this every night. You turn away from those sins. Godly sorrow produces repentance. You change your heart, you change your mind, you change your life. And then confess your faith that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Be baptized in water for the remission of your sins. Be raised to walk in newness of life. This is your time right now. Won't you come as together we stand? And as we sing.